Honourable members, thanks very much for using your maps to find this place. We are 8 minutes into our time, understandably so. Can we at the offset agree that we would be able to remain in the session until 12:30? Are you asking us or telling?
So if I can just be excused, let's say 12:15.
12:15?
Yes.
Okay. Honourable Van Lennon?
I'm not going to take 15 minutes to walk to my next appointment, but I would also use this time.
Okay. Can we then say we conclude at 12:15, which gives us 2 hours? The colleagues from the Department of Tourism, Mr. Victor Tarache, who is the DGG on Policy and Knowledge Systems, welcome to you, welcome to the representatives from the Office of the Minister, welcome also to Ms. Morongwe Rampele. Is Rampele or Rampele? The DA will have to tell us. Honourable, Madam Rampele, who is the Deputy Director General for Domestic Tourism Management. She will do, she will lead the second phase of the presentation for us. And they also have Mr. Thabo Manetsi, who is the Director for West and Northern Cape, and he is on heritage development. Honourable members, you should have before you 2 documents, stapled as 2, but they are in fact 3. The first one is the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which is the NTSS. To say that what we intend to do was to just look at the NTSS for today. That was the original arrangement. However, when we came to know that we are going on this visit to Mapungubwe, which is heritage, we then said, but it's going to be strategic that we, in this meeting, already get some insight into the heritage and cultural aspects of tourism. So we then consulted with the Department of Tourism, and we were advised that the National Tourism Sector Strategy will take a session on its own. And we said, okay, let's look at how we then deal with it, whilst we also use the time to prepare for the heritage and cultural exposure that we're going to have. So the agreement was that we will have Mr. Tarache presenting to us in about 10-12 minutes this document that is before us. We will, however, not exhaust the document and engage meaningfully with it. Let's agree that what we do is that if there are serious questions for clarification, let's deal with it. With an understanding that before the end of this year, we will have a thorough discussion and interrogation of the strategy. So it's just sort of to orient us, because it's, you can't go look at heritage and culture without understanding the broader strategy. So that's the thing then. Then we're going to spend approximately another 25 to 35 minutes on a presentation on the heritage and cultural and the rural tourism strategies. and we will focus today's meeting on that, which means that presentations, if we say 12 plus 35, that will give us about 45 minutes for the presentation. We are requesting our colleagues from the Department of Tourism to be mindful that when we've given you 45, you don't need to use all 45. We won't report you to the minister if you take less than that. But can we get the agreement of the honourable members that we could proceed in that way? Is there any honourable Pandanga?
I've got a confusion here about documents. I've got three of these, but I haven't got this one.
Can we just make sure that Honourable Van Lingen has proper documents?
Just this.
That's how you do it in the Northern Cape. Are you able to assist there? We want to say to the colleagues from the Department of Tourism, we will declare the bags. There was a trick in terms of the color of the bags. They said that the two people that have the same colors will be sharing a room during the tour. So here we can just look at our bags. Honorable Lord. We do appreciate that. Thank you very much to the colleague. Colleagues, before we go into the presentation, just two other issues. I'm going to present to you the minutes of the last meeting for adoption. But before I do that, can we just restate that Honourable Van Lingen and myself were in a meeting this morning called by the chairperson of the NZOP, what they call the Programming Committee. And in that committee, we looked, amongst others, at the oversight visits of ministry. And it was emphasized that everybody of the committee must have an understanding of what will happen during the oversight. I felt good and thought that we should express our appreciation to Honourable Suka for allowing us the time during our meeting yesterday to have that conversation that we had after the presentation yesterday. And I would therefore assume that we are all very clear as to what the oversight plan would be. The days in Northern Cape, as well as the days in Limpopo. I have just been informed by colleagues in tourism that traveling from Musina to Mapungubwe will take us more than 2 hours. Sorry? From Polokwane to... Okay. From Polokwane to Musina. Okay. We'll start earlier, yes. Look, the advantage that we have, Honourable Van Lingen, is that we are going to be together in Kimberley, in Quinton, and we have already informed Mr. Tilenia that he needs to communicate with the Secretary in Economic Matters that they need to relook that. We could, in fact, leave Polokwane at after 7 that morning. The other thing, did you listen to the weather forecast for Upington? You know, Upington, it gets so hot that the mosquitoes don't fly in summer. But not mosquitoes. So the piece of advice when you go on international travel would also be to say that please bring your shorts and your sandals with you when you go to Mapungubwe. We can dress informally. When we're going to meet the members in the agricultural sector in the Northern Cape, we're not going to go there with a tie on. We will wear our lighter clothes so that we are not aspiring and intimidating the hosts by just being too formal for them. It's not about us.
Only 35 degrees on Monday.
It's only 35 degrees on Monday in Upington. So we've dealt with that. The point that I wanted to make was just to say that we wanted to make sure that we are all on par with regard to the oversight. Honourable Bader, you were...
Yes, thank you, Chair. But we still going to be expecting documentation to come in tomorrow as we did yesterday.
Definitely, yes. I received some of it last night already. Honourable members, can we then look at the minute of our meeting that was held on the 17th of September, 2014? We had a briefing by the Department of International Relations on SADC integration process. The presentation was done by Dr. Eddie Moloka. The proceedings was the briefing by the department as item 3.2 in the minutes. And it was mentioned that we were meant to be briefed by the SAD on the SADC integration process, but the department requested to interact with the committee on the current regional political developments discussed during the SADC Double Troika Summit of Heads of State and Government. 3.2 was we looked at the current political instability that has engulfed Lesotho and had a conversation on that. 3.2, we looked at issues within the Democratic Republic of Congo. And then item 4 was the final deliberations and comments. I'll just read that. The committee welcomed briefing on the outcome of the SADC Double Troika on Lesotho and DRC and engaged with the department on the following issues. 4.1, the advice which the South African government could provide to Lesotho, the best way to depoliticize its military. 4.2, SA government should provide advice to Lesotho to reconsider its floor crossing legislation, which is the contributor to political instability. The meeting was adjourned at 12:30.
I propose.
Proposed by Honourable Favour. Can we have somebody to second the adoption of the minutes? Honourable Super. Thank you very much. But you also want to speak.
Yes, but firstly, sir, I don't have the agenda.
Don't worry about the agenda, because the agenda basically has three items on it, the standard items. Attendance apologies, adoption of minutes, and a presentation by the Department of Tourism. Sorry that we do not seem to be having hard copies yet. Can we proceed with that still, Honourable Sir? Thank you very much. Can I then immediately repeat our welcome to the colleagues from the Department of Tourism. Your leader of your delegation, can we hand over to you, sir?
Yes, I was having a meeting. I have a little check on 4.2. We are recommending that the South African government should provide advice to reconsider its focus. That's a political matter. Well, this word advice maybe covers me because I was just asking myself, do we have that authority to impose or to give direction to the city government as to what to do in terms of their policy, the floor crossing vis-a-vis the offshore crossing. But when you say maybe you should give advice, it could be accepted, well, it's fine. I was asking about that and being allowed on this matter so that we are not seen as a big brother, because that's the sovereign state.
Very, very, very helpful, but also we may need to remind ourselves, Honourable Suka, that what happened was that Dr. Moloka gave us insight into what are the strategies that is already being pursued by the Honourable Deputy President. And therefore, we have that insight that the Deputy President with the Department of International Relations has already identified that as a problem. And you will... No, you were not there. You were not there at the Heads of Mission meeting. When our Honourable Chief Whip was there with me, at the Heads of Mission meeting, that matter was also raised as part of the problem that they're having in Lesotho. So the political parties in Lesotho have already agreed that that is a problem. So the advice in this instance is also one where we're saying that they have decided on it, and we're saying that we commend the idea. It's a very good one.
There doesn't make a gap in the wall.
I was part of a conversation on the roof in Linga, now that you're pointing that out, where we acknowledge that one of the big problems that we have in this parliament is that we don't have enough space. I'm not happy that we're meeting here, but I think that we appreciate that when Erasmus was arranging this, he wasn't aware that that would be a problem.
I just want to say, this used to be a meeting place for the Department of Education. This was being educated people on the other side of the
world. Is that disturbing us?
No, dear President, should might disturb them. My point is that we must report matters like this, and we must drive it as committee, that the committee must be maintained and not just led. Like yesterday's complaints about the fact that there were two places, there was no electricity in the flood or in the microphones. Were those issues reported, and can we report this? Because if we don't insist that Parliament is maintained, we will not have a maintained Senate, and then we will go out and have meetings at 4-3 places, which is not good.
Mr. Erasmus, can we ask that you take action on that and that you give us copies of your correspondence when we meet again? Thank you very much. You were giving to you, Mr. Tahe, to lead us.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will try to do this in 10 minutes, but I would like to just indicate that what I would rather focus on is the essence of the NTSS as opposed to the whole presentation, which covers the actual strategy, some report in terms of progress with regard to implementation, and some justifications in terms of why certain direction was taken with regards to this thing. But if we will still have another opportunity, we will then be able to go to those details. But this will be able to give the overview, so to say. So we'll cover the mission, the vision, we'll cover the whole approval process and what actually happened there, which I think is important for the committee as such. We had an approval from Cabinet in 2010, May 2010. The initial approval, which essentially was to allow us to go into consultative process on the draft document that was there. We arrived at this draft document through a panel that was comprised of people from business, people from organized labor, people from broad spectrum of people within the sector, academia and so on. And then this was a ministerial panel that was essentially advising on the trends that they see and how such could actually then be taken into account in the actual planning process, culminating into that May 2010 process, which led to Cabinet saying, yes, we can actually go and consult with the public. The consultations drew 57,000 comments across the country. And we went through this one by one, and we looked at them, and we took into account everything that was actually stated there. Then we got approval in March 2012 for the actual strategy. For the actual strategy. The vision, Chairperson, is to be a top 20 tourism destination by 2020. And I need to just explain this a little bit. The idea is not to be number 20 or number 19, or it's like this is this is the best number one destination, number two destination. The idea is that we identify the areas where we are competitive on, and we believe that these are our selling proposition that others would find it hard to actually compete with us on if we do what we are supposed to do right collectively as a country. And in those specifics, we should always strive to be within the top 20. I'll give an example. If you take wildlife as a proposition, and we then say, when it comes to wildlife, if anybody wants to visit a wildlife destination and we were to choose 20 destinations, we should be one of those. Now, it's not a target, it's an aspiration, it's where we envision to be, ultimately. We then say, take for instance, the island destinations. So it's not about the numbers. The island destinations, if you look at them, some of them, you find an island which has got a population of, I will not mention names because this is on record, and I don't want to promote other destinations. We promote South Africa. But the key issue is that you find an island destination that has got a total of, say, 90,000 people. That's the whole population of the island. They do not want to exceed up to 250,000 people coming in as tourists. But they still offer the best value. And if people want to go to such places, which offer beach experience and so on, they become part of that list of top 20 in that particular experience. And we are saying that is how we should actually make sure that we get ourselves into that level of game. But if we're playing the normal, pure number game, we would be around about 30 if we're talking about tourists, but we would be around about just slightly under 20 if we're talking about overall arrivals. But that's not the game that the strategy intends to play in. We want to be competitive in the areas that we've identified, that we know this is what we should actually work and really make sure that we promote in that particular way. The mission is to grow a sustainable tourism economy in South Africa with a domestic, regional and international components. It should be based on innovation, service excellence, meaningful partnerships, as well as participation broadly. And we're guided by a number of values, fundamental of which is the upholding of our constitutional values, the respect for culture and heritage, service excellence is one of the virtues, and commitment to transformation, accountability, responsible tourism, trust across the board, whether it is from the policy-making perspective or whether it is from the provision of services perspective on the business side, transparency and integrity, flexibility and adaptability to change. The broader objectives, we clustered the objectives into three themes, and these themes were for the theme on tourism and the economy, we've got a theme on visitor experience and the brand, and we've got a theme on sustainability and good governance. And I'll go slightly deeper into what the actual objectives are when I deal with the indicators, because we'll have what they are, which is in the next slide. Now, the first objective there, under the tourism and the economy, we would like to grow the tourism sector's absolute contribution to the economy. Now, there has been a question as to whether we want to grow the contribution of tourism into the economy as compared to other sectors. And the question is, if we say, for instance, we are contributing to the economy, currently we contribute to GDP about 3%. If we say that is a direct, indirect included, we contribute about 9%. Now, if we were to target increasing our contribution compared to other contributors, that is not a measure of performance on our side, because it is also then dependent on whether other sectors of our economy are doing better. And if they are doing much better, it's really not going to be visible whether we are actually doing better with us. So what should be happening is that what we are bringing into the economy should be growing, and we should be able to see that level of growth. And that is what we intend to do. That is what we've been doing. When you go into the performance, you will be able to see that that is actually what we've been able to do. Provide excellent people development and decent work within the tourism sector. And what we intended to do in this one was to ensure that there is a level of compliance with the decent work framework. And the decent work framework is guided by the Sectoral Determination Act for hospitality in our sector. There is a specific determination. And the ownership of this then becomes the Department of Labor in terms of the inspections with regards to where we are and so on. But the most important thing that we need to look at with regards to this is that there's a question as to, beyond the hospitality framework, what other frameworks are required. But those are policy matters which require policy decisions and discussions, and which is not necessarily a strategy matter. The strategy focuses on ensuring that we improve skills levels across the tourism value chain. And as we speak, there's been a number of initiatives that have been driven by domestic tourism, for chef training, sommeliers training, a whole host of different types of skills which were identified originally through a process of the development of the skills development strategy for tourism. Tourism's domestic contribution to the economy. The indicator here was the percentage contribution of domestic to the overall GDP. We wanted that to increase, and we wanted that to be more. It was deliberate. Part of that was you always will need your domestic tourism to be strong enough to be able to absorb shocks during times such as the economic crisis globally and so on. So that base, and it is also the same base that creates the same products that you would also then be able to offer to your international tourists and so on. And that is an area that we really are putting more emphasis now. National Treasury has also come on board to make sure that even the promotion in that regard is taken to a whole different level. I know you will be meeting with SA Tourism, but they'll be able to take you through the figures and some of the strategies they've got, strategies that they've developed around this, the chocolate campaign which they are running, and what are the details around that they will be able to take the committee through. And we also want to see an increase in the domestic holiday trips. And indeed, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, they across the world, destinations that are really successful, they've got a strong domestic component, and that really absorbs a large amount of shocks. And then there's an objective on the contribution to regional tourism economy. And the issue here, Honorable Chairperson, is that tourism knows no boundaries. An example, if you take the Japanese, for whom we get 30,000 plus per annum, if you take that community, they would want to come here, land at OAS Tambo International, and then spend a night or so in Johannesburg. They would then go over to the Victoria Falls, either on the Zambian side, largely on the Zambian side. And once they are there, they would spend a night or two, and they come back. Once they are back, they come down to cater. For some other reason, they always want to spend a night or two in Pretoria. They love the jacaranda trees. We can't explain it, but they always do that. Now, if the people in business, because this is not a government strategy, this is a sector strategy, if the people in business are not packaging with that in mind, that already makes us lose on some of that kind of business. The other work that we do, which includes investigating how we can actually harmonize the guiding experience across the borders, and that work is way advanced with the University of Pretoria. Visitor experience and the branch, we have an objective of delivering world-class visitor experience, and this, I'm sure you will get some detailed feedback at a later stage with regards to satisfaction levels, with regards to some of the work that we're doing with regards to service excellence, which is driven by domestic tourism, some of the work that we're doing with rating instruments and so on, which is work we're doing with the University of Johannesburg. So there's a whole host of things that are actually happening in this regard. We have an objective on entrenching the culture of tourism amongst South Africans. And this is probably the most important in terms of us getting our domestic tourism to the levels that we require. There are people on a wheelchair person who have the money but have not traveled. And there's a whole host of reasons why people don't travel. Some people do not travel because they're not necessarily as yet been exposed to what it is all about, what do you actually get out of it, and so on and so forth. So these things have actually formed a larger portion of what the SAT, the Southern Tourism Strategy, on domestic front is all about. But when they actually give you that detailed briefing, you will then be able to see what has been done, what segments have been identified, what income levels they are, what their disposable income and so on, and whether they are able to actually still take these trips or not, and you would then be able to follow through properly. The other objective here is to position South Africa as a globally recognized tourism destination brand. And this, by and large, forms the largest part of the work that is done by South African tourism. And they do it in multiplicity of ways. They've got presence in offices that are across the world, in specific markets that are selected through a proper scientifically determined process that then allows us to see where the highest yield is likely going to be, and then we'll be able to invest in that. And this has moved on to we now have offices in the continent which we do not have, and that is the part of what NTS has actually came up with to say we would like to see a dedicated focus on the continent, and which was driven by the kind of value we're getting. We were getting individuals spend much more from Angola, much more from the Nigerians, from the traditional markets, and that is why we actually then ended up with that approach. The third theme, which is sustainability and good governance, first objective there is about transformation. We've got some figures related to BEE work, but it would be a lot more clearer, I suppose, when we actually present our plans for the coming year, and also present our reports in terms of what is it that we're doing. But there is a lot of that orientation from the work of the department. There is more that can be done by industry, and this is an acknowledged fact that there is a lot more that can still be done by industry. And it's not just within the tourism sector, it's really across all the different sectors. That is by and large what led to the revision of the goals and some of the amendments in the Act, which deals with the broad-based like, economic empowerment. There are issues pertaining to seasonality, which are issues we grapple with, and these are in at times mitigated by the manner in which we have try to diversify the strategy, because the strategy also brings in elements that pertain to events, in particular business events, and that will then cushion in times when you do not actually have your leisure tourists that would have actually been the ones occupying all these establishments and going to these attractions and so on. We have an objective around unlocking local government tourism economic development. There's a lot of work that we've done here, inclusive of some training and capacity development, where we have got two programs running concurrently. One that focuses on the capacity aspect of the policy makers, the councillors, who are dealing with tourism issues, and running this with the University of Pretoria. What they do, they would take them through the content of tourism itself, but also how to take that and apply it in the decision-making processes within the actual municipality. We've gone through almost 61 or so municipalities across the country so far, and we are still running this. We are going to run another one now during the later part of November, which will have both the other component of the political principles at local government level, as well as the officials that deal with it. Part of what we're trying to address with this one in particular was to avoid a situation where, because individual X happens to have expertise that are considered rare, would then bargain all the way from one municipality to another. And when you have this person moving from this one to the next, from this one to the next, the value is not actually even realized by any of these municipalities. But if we have this capacity fully developed, then you are in a position to say there is very little space for this person to be hoping. So you concentrate where you are and you are able to really do something good, which can allow you to have a horizontal movement, a vertical movement instead of this horizontal movement all the way. Briefly, in terms of the target, I'm not going to go into individual ones necessarily, but what I would like to highlight is that we would like to see a contribution of tourism to the GDP, direct and indirect combined, at just under half a trillion by 2020. And that's 499 billion rand by 2020. It sounds like a big figure that is really probably not so achievable. At the moment, the latest figures that we've got is that combined was already at 300 and something billion. So we are, and that was 2012. So there is and the projections that we are using, which are linked to the WTTC, which has got some of the best methodologies in terms of estimation, actually give us the comfort that we are on track to actually get to that. We wanted to create 225,000 jobs overall. I can say in just 1 year, which was between 2011 and 2012, we had about 25,000 jobs. Direct. So there is very clear progress that we are making, and then we believe that we might even surpass those targets. But by and large, we believe our targets, what we really want to see, is the GDP issue, is the jobs issue. The rest of the other things, we believe they are actually drivers towards it. So we get more tourists, they spend more. Indeed, that would lead us to getting better GDP figures, that would also lead us to getting better balance of payments in terms of the trade accounts. So that's where we really want to go. If we can get the jobs and we can get the GDP right through this, all these other things that we are doing, which really is to focus on growing the new markets, which are inclusive of the BRICS
growing the continental markets, growing the domestic markets, growing the event markets, and the events we are underlining, we are mainly focusing on business events because those actually bring nanas that actually go into the establishment. People that would then come and actually pay for our accommodation and the food and so on and so forth. And we still have our food in the traditional markets, which basically are better and better. If you take the UK market, for instance, we still about 400,000. And that on its own gives us slightly about 5 billion. So we can't get out of such markets. And the minute you get out of a market today, you are not guaranteed that when you come back, that market would still know about your existence and what you are able to offer and so on. And all these things, Honorable Chairperson, I think when we have got a more detailed in-depth discussion, then we can take you through what are the things that we're doing to be able to support these things and to be able to get to these goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very valuable introduction.
We have agreed before that we wouldn't thoroughly interrogate the presentation now, but wouldn't want to leave from here with things that will also block us when we engage with the second and third presentations. Honorable Faber?
Thank you, Chair. I promised you all these questions because of time constraints. Just quickly, the first one, sir, and it's very important, and this is with visa regulations at the moment, with overseas tourism. I think you will also see that it's dramatically taken, it went down dramatically, because of the new immigration laws as well as with our visa regulations. And I wanted to know what you as a Department of Tourism are doing. And I know even in the Western Cape, it's been affecting tourism a hell of a lot. The second, I would just like to say, Gary Player made the remark about a year ago in one of the newspapers, and he said that South Africa could be one of the three top tourism destinations in the world if only one thing could change, and that is crime in South Africa came down. And I travel a lot, and I've got a lot of friends from Europe, etc., and the one thing everyone asks is about the crime in our country, and specifically violent crime. So, you know, when we want to go and sail our country outside, if we can somehow get crime down, now I know this is totally different, then we must speak to the Minister of Police and blah, blah, blah. It's a lot of things to change. But I'm just saying from what I hear from people overseas, and this is the one thing, and it's about crime. How do you address it so that we can actually encourage tourism? Because we must understand that money, specifically a lot of money that will create jobs, comes from your European countries where the currencies are at this stage at a much better level than our end. So these people, it's affordable for them to come to South Africa, but how do we give them the message that it is not dangerous to come to South Africa?
Honorable Faber, we did agree that we will raise issues that are really burning us, that we want to engage with the strategy thoroughly. And the questions that you're raising are very important. And if you say that it is a burning issue, I agree with you. I'm just not certain as to whether we should discuss that now, precisely because of the importance of it, that we wouldn't be able to do justice to the conversation now. I'm however leaving it to the DTG to decide how do you want to deal with that. But let me get an indication whether there are any other burning matters that we want to raise now as well. If there ain't other, it will make it easier for us to go forward. Honorable Suka?
Thank you, Sir President. No, for me, it's not burning. More than is for us to go and read, internalize the documents, so that we come back more informed. I want to read the document more, and maybe have some exchanges with the official, so that we get more understanding. My interest is on the second document, rather than you see, but also my experience, you know, when we, at some point, we did that, but in the 90s, mid-90s, when I was also chaplain in the province, towards Greek Island, a very nice destination, where in a ship, the boat, it was my first time getting into that boat, full of self-confidence. And you know, when they were discussing, we don't know each other. We were just sitting there, not coming from the same places in South Africa. But sometimes we had to take a stance to say, no, we also do not assist the situation of South Africa in terms of demystifying the issue of crime internationally. Because sometimes we will talk colloquially. You know, unconscious to say, yeah, there's crime in South Africa. You know what, it's nice here on the shores. And passing the message to the international community, we are carrying sometimes ourselves. Instead of demystifying the issue of crime, yes, crime is there, and it's a serious matter. But also, I think, up to a point where we also requested at some point in time in history, the media to assist South Africa, because if we want investments to grow the GDP, we must also be responsible in what we say. So I'm saying there is also that dynamic that is within the context of what is being raised here. So I'm saying it's a debatable matter. It's a very serious matter, crime. It doesn't care any political boundaries, no color. But also we as opposition, we need to up the game. So where it is crime, we speak of it, condemn it. But where there is a due process, I mean, credit, we must also say so. So I'm saying that. We need to balance on the matter. Thank you,
sir. Yeah, I was precisely worried for this type of things because I'm also itching to just say what's happening. And you would know in Mombasa, in Tanganyika, and even in Nairobi, where we hear of all these terror that's happening there, people visit. It's going to be important that we look at what is it.
I actually want to compliment the DDG on an excellent presentation. I think his understanding that we have now after his presentation, 15 seconds after you. I think it's been an excellent presentation. Thank you, DDG.
You haven't seen nothing yet.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you. Honorable members would probably have seen a joint media statement that was issued by the Honorable Minister Haneko and Minister Gigaba. And this statement explained some of the agreements in terms of how to deal with the implementation of the immigration regulations. And in that statement, there were a number of points that were expressed by the Home Affairs Minister. But before I even get to that, there was an issue of the Arab Legion birth certificate, which the minister has suspended its implementation until next June. On the other side, the issue about receiving, there was, you would recall, honorable members, that there was a provision for travelers that come here with a transit visa arrangement if they're going to the neighboring country and so on. And in that statement, there was an indication that there's a consideration of waiving that provision and making provisions within the airports, like the port of entry, to be able to get the same data that nonetheless would still have been able to get. Now, visa provisions, let me start with our immediate environment within SADC. In SADC, South Africa does not require visa, except for Madagascar, because we had a challenge with the whole coup and the legitimacy of the regime at that particular time. Also, with the DRC. And the reason for that is because the DRC is still busy building its population register because of the conflicts and so on. So you would not be in a position to know who is actually coming from DRC and who's not coming from DRC if you don't go through those due processes. There are instances, I must say, without singling out a country, where we certainly need to have these due diligence. Part of why South Africa is this attractive is because it's deemed safe if we were to talk about this from a terrorism point of view. And the day that we do not know who's coming and who's going, that would create problems. If you take a large part of Europe, most of our market, there's complete wave. You even in instances where there would have been a possible reciprocity, take the UK for instance. The UK requires visas even from officials, even from diplomats from South Africa. The UK requires visas. But Home Affairs, to their credit, I must say, they were the ones to say, hang on, you have brought us this information and you're saying this is the numbers that we're getting. These are the people that we're getting, is 400 and something thousand. And you're saying out of these people we're actually earning over 5 billion rand. There's no way that we would reciprocate on that. And the former Minister of Home Affairs, Minister Pando, went on she issued a statement to indicate that if there is such a reciprocity, it is purely diplomatic as well as official. Very few people, very, very few people, they've got absolutely no end in the numbers for tourists that come to South Africa. But in terms of people that are coming from the UK to South Africa as well, there is a complete wave. So these are some of the good things, I must say, on the side of Home Affairs. Now, what the statement says, when it comes to India and China, those are our two biggest markets from Asia, growing leaps and bounds. They were not even anywhere, but now they are right within the top 10. In fact, in the case of China, they are actually now in the top 4. So when you look at that, you then say, what do you do here? The Chinese, they have their own requirements. So you want to bring the Chinese and you want to get the necessary data and so on and so forth. We have to go through those requirements. We have specific missions. And they require that where you have a mission is where you can actually operate your visa registration facility. So what then needs to happen to then explore these possible mobile facilities that you can actually go to a particular center and you know this is high season and you will have this number of applications and we work with trades to be able to do that. As I'm speaking right now, they are continuous engagements between Home Affairs through DDG Market and the industry. The industry has a team of people that are actually working directly with McKay on this, which is a process that will then look at how things get better and so on and so forth. But we have to always make sure there is a balance between security of the country and also our interest, which is on the trade side, particularly on the tourism side. So that is a continuous engagement. We have got fora that are meant to implement this. As we go through this, you will find the slide that was going to follow immediately after that slide. You will find this. You've got government there, you've got the NGOs, CEOs, you've got the business and so on. In the government forum, that's where we discuss these issues. We take these issues to the classes and so on and so forth. But it's a process. But we build on this from time to time. On crime issues, We focus on the marketing side. We have got to deal with perceptions and realities. And that's really the main thing. Feedback I can give is that people that, before they came to South Africa, had a particular view of South Africa. When we do our exit survey, these are the people that are saying, I'm coming back. And indeed, these are people that are coming back to the country. So there is a lot more work that needs to be done with regards to actually marketing and bringing this message out. And without specifically mentioning countries, you've got countries where their tourism is good, but their crime is far worse than what we have experienced. So we need to our specifics on the marketing side. I can't talk on the security aspects of the country.
Let's look at the, I don't know which one is presenting first, of the two of them. Have you set up already? Oh, you have set, yes. Which one comes with heritage? Oh, it's a combination.
It's a combination of both.
We don't have.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for this opportunity to share with you our work, and in particular focusing on the heritage and ground tourism strategies. We have packaged the presentation in this manner. We'll take you first through the background of where the thinking behind these strategies comes from and what the strategies are all about. We'll zoom on specifics on both the strategies and strategic objectives, and also the actions emanating from these both strategies. And then, most importantly, as you also have rightfully indicated, next week you'll be proceeding to Mapungubwe, we will, under point four, draw your focus on the overlaps between heritage, tourism, and rural tourism as well, so that you get a sense basically where the overlaps are, areas of synergies are. And then number five, we'll talk about implementation of both strategies, how we've gone about implementing the strategies, and how we've also fared in that regard. And then we'll conclude point six. Just a bit of background, the National Department of Tourism developed and launched both the National Rural Tourism Strategy and the National Heritage and Cultural Tourism Strategy in 2012. This also included a detailed action plans for implementation. I think one of the key things that honorable members and honorable chair would agree is that we develop further strategies, but really at times we do not attach action plans to even begin to action the priorities that emanate from these strategies. So these strategies have got action plans and certain time frames attached to them as well. All strategies, honorable members, are informed by what the DDG has indicated. The National Tourism Sector Strategy informs these strategies, and most importantly, we also developed the Domestic Tourism Growth Strategy, which also informs the strategies that we'll be discussing. The strategies also broadly seek to respond to the national outcomes that have been adopted by government, and these are outcomes also that are still clearly outlined in the NDP as well. The best outcome is outcome four, which looks at economic development and job creation. Here, basically, we need to look at opportunities of unlocking the economic potential of heritage resources and rural tourism products as well for job creation and sustainable livelihoods. Outcome 7, we know it is purely around rural development, and the strategies are also geared towards contributing in this space as well. Outcome 11 is focusing on regional integration. If you look at our World Heritage Sites, for instance, three of them considered trans-frontier conservation areas. In other words, they cross boundaries. Heritage it's transnational, if I put it that way. It crosses boundaries. Take Mapungubwe as well. It's located in the confluence border South Africa, Zimbabwe, and Botswana. So the trans-frontier space is there to foster regional integration that we are talking about here, happening within the product of the World Heritage Site. Some useful definitions. You know, when we put together this strategy, you know, with the academia, I'm also partly an academic myself, you get different interpretations
about what is heritage, cultural tourism, what is culture, what is heritage. You get all contested definitions in place. You know, we would always talk about heritage from your own point of view, from how you were brought up, from your cultural perspective, you know, and that will be your definition of what is cultural heritage, or what would be rural tourism, so for that matter. So we subjected all our definition to legislated definitions, you know, either legislated through our white papers on art and culture, white paper on, you know, the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa, our National Heritage Resources Act, and so on. But in a nutshell, if we talk about heritage and cultural tourism, we simply refer to tourism activities based on tourist consumption of heritage and cultural products. So it is basically a focused segment of tourism that is geared towards the consumption of heritage and cultural tourism products. And then if we refer to rural tourism simply refers to tourism activities occurring in rural areas based on tourist consumption of products in rural areas. Again, we've been engaging intensively with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reforms around definitions of what is a rural area. You know, there's no definition on rural area in South Africa. There's no definition on it. There are contestations. The one school of thought says that a rural area should be sort of like defined in relation to our former bantustans. That is the one position. You know, the other position says no. Rather define rural spaces or settings in relation to agricultural lands that are productive. But what happens to agricultural spaces or even spaces which are not urban centric, that are either which were not catered for under the bantustans, which are also not within the agricultural productive space, but heading to those communities. So there's still debate around this definition of rural tourism. So we're trying to work closely with the Department of Rural Tourism. Department of Rural Development and Land Reforms in synchronizing our plans as we go forward. The zooming now into the National Heritage and Cultural Tourism Strategy. Vision of the strategy really is to realize global competitiveness of South African heritage and cultural resources through tourism development. And here, basically, the set of steps that we have adopted towards achieving that vision is towards unlocking the economic potential of heritage and rural tourism resources through sustainable tourism development. Raising awareness of the ability of heritage and cultural tourism to contribute towards social cohesion. We know that heritage resources, without necessarily focusing on the commodification of culture and cultural heritage resources, they are a fundamental DNA of nation building. They are quite central in creating nationhood, in creating or inculcating a culture of patriotism in the culture, because you're drawing from your cultural heritage resources. And that is fundamental in shaping the identity of any nation. So social cohesion is very crucial in issues of cultural heritage resources. And this is basically a unique offering that we offer the world. People coming to South Africa, they're here to experience the unique offerings of South Africa. We spoke about the Big Five. You know, some of the destinations position themselves as safari type of destination. We have far moved beyond that to say that South Africa has unique cultural diversity that can be exploited, that can be shared with the international community. Take, for instance, your World Heritage Sites are indicated. Look at the boom in your township tourism, people wanting to go and imbibe the African cuisine, your chicken yama in the township. They come in droves just to experience it. That is part of our cultural heritage.
as well, and that is our unique offering. Now, these unique selling points are exactly these kind of offerings that we need to offer to the world. The objective of this strategy is to create a framework for the development and promotion of heritage and cultural tourism products for economic development and sustainable livelihood at community grass level. Why heritage is so central in unlocking the economic potential? The one thing that is key in our history, whether politically or not, is the fact that local communities have emerged from all the repressive regimes with their heritage intact. The only thing that was stripped from oppressed communities was a whole lot of things except for their heritage. We still have our languages intact, although they need to be preserved and conserved. We still have our way of life intact. So no one would take that from us, you know, throughout the repressive colonial and apartheid regime. So we have that, and we're using that now to take to the world and share that to the world. The strategy has these priorities. You know, we could have identified a number of things that we need to prioritize in implementing the strategy. However, we, after an immense and intensive consultation with various communities, we emerged with these strategic objectives and themes and actions that we need to prioritize. The first strategic theme there is tourism research, information and knowledge management. It is very important, honorable members, that we always create a repository of archival sources on our cultural heritage tourism products. Most of the time, research is done by outsiders about our own culture and heritage. How often do you find researchers from Germany, Europe, coming into our cultural spaces, and they conduct research, and that kind of research is even hard to be accessed by our own people. So building a culture of knowledge production in terms of developing the repository of our culture and heritage resources is very important. So we flag that as one of our priority areas. It can happen at various levels, government, even beyond government, because this is a sector strategy. Whatever research that you conduct, package that information, produce knowledge around it, and then ensure that it is well kept so that there is a point of reference for that kind of data. We don't publish much as this within this space. We don't write much. We don't research much within this space. Research is done by others, you know, and that is a glaring reality. The priority number two focuses on sustainable development and management. Here, if you take the scope of heritage resources, there are tensions. On the other hand, there are those who are for conservation purposes only. Our heritage, others, they contend strongly that it is not for them. We should not even open it up for tourist consumption. The other school of thought says, no. Unlock the economic potential of heritage resources by through tourism. And then here is the tension. How do we draw balance? Protecting heritage while at the same time unlocking the economic potential of that heritage for the very same communities of that particular heritage. Because what is key here is that South Africa is a developing country, and the heritage landscape is littered with different cultures, but most importantly, littered with this memory. We need to find ways in which we draw a balance between conservation needs and also unlocking tourism development. You know, I know our cultures are not for sale, but there is ways in which, you know, through proper, you know, active participation of the very physical reverence of this heritage, playing a part and participating genuinely in accordance to that term, in how they need to share their cultures with the world for their own empowerment. They must dictate what and how their cultures and cultural heritage resources should be traded, if I put it that way, with the world. That is commodification of culture. The third one is tourism market promotion and raising up awareness. In our studies, we're packaging the strategy on heritage and cultural tourism. We realized that in terms of tourism markets, you'd find that South Africa then, it would really position itself as a safari type of destination. But recent trends and empirical data that we managed to draw revealed lately that South Africa is more competitive as a culture and heritage destination. Because we've got the cultural diversity. How many languages do we have? In fact, we have more than 11 languages. The official one is 11, but we have more than that. We've got Komani, Ngu language, and so on. And many others as well. And then promotion here, honorable members here, and raising awareness around our culture and heritage tourism products. You know, one of the things that we need to really, really do very well as a country is when we promote our heritage, we don't just talk about the importance of the heritage and so on and so forth. Like, for instance, you go to Robben Island, they tell you about the different layers of history of Robben Island, but you are not told. It applies to various other sites. You are not told on the conservation needs. They are not brought to your attention that there is a need to, there are these conservation needs around Robben Island as part of the tourist package. So what is key here, when you talk about raising awareness and promoting the actual product, it is very important because we are working with or operating within the green economy. It is very important that issues of conservation are brought to the fore, because as consumers of this kind of product, you must also be sensitized about the conservation needs of the kind of product as well. So it shouldn't just end on just sharing knowledge and information about the history of a place and the cultural significance of the heritage resource itself, but rather also elevate the conservation aspect of that resource that you are there to appreciate as well. So that is another angle that you need to look at as a country, because we have to promote a culture conscious and responsible tourism within the sector.
Remind you that you have taken 15 minutes to do one-fifth of the presentation.
Okay. I'm going to sail through now. I'm going to glide through it now. Cooperation, partnership, institutional arrangement. We know that issues of cultural tourism, even tourism, is a shared competence across. You know, so we need to strengthen cooperation, partnerships, and establishing institutional arrangements. Resource mobilization is also key. We know that allocations to what's the maintenance of our heritage resources are at minimal, so we need to be raising more money and funding for that. I'm going to skip this one and talk about those actions later. What does the Heritage and Cultural Tourism Strategy recommend? It says to us, as a country, because we've got a plethora and a host of heritage resources across the landscape, let's prioritize the 8 world heritage sites first and make them work better as UNESCO proclaimed globally competitive destinations. Let's start there first. So Robben Island, Umafungubwe, Isangaliso, Kahlamba, the Cradle of Humankind, Cradle for Dope, let's work with them and make them work better as globally competitive destinations. Let's start there with the 8, because already those are globally significant sites which have been proclaimed by UNESCO. You know, UNESCO, if you don't look after yourself very well, they deregister or delist the site. So it's very important we also work closely in addressing those things which are needing attention within our World Heritage so that we remain globally competitive. The 8 World Heritage Sites, I'm going to try and put them within the structure of the World Tourism Strategy here. Firstly, we need to understand what the World Strategy stands for, what it is to achieve, and so on. the vision is very clear. It says develop rural tourism economy. The mission is also very clear. It says to enhance the growth and development of tourism in rural communities, particularly in less visited provinces. The objective is also very clear, creating an enabling environment for rural tourism development to stimulate job creation, local economies in impoverished rural areas. And then the strategic objectives are more similar to the ones that are outlined in the heritage and cultural tourism strategy. I won't get into details around these strategic priority areas. However, it is very important to focus on this slide. Through extensive consultations with various local government structures, municipalities, tourism structures within communities, the National House of Traditional Leaders, Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and also guided by the Comprehensive Rural Development Program of the Department of Rural Development, these are the nodes that were identified that as national government, these are key nodes that must be prioritized for rural development. And if you were to beam a map and take the World Heritage Site, you'll see there's a clear overlap of the World Heritage Site with these areas that have been identified. The prioritized rural nodes that were identified, these were identified prior to various consultations with the provinces. But after the consultations with the provinces, provinces recommended the ones that you see under recommended there. You'll see there's a host of them. There, that these should be the priority nodes in this first phase that we need to be focusing on and joining forces with different government departments and other stakeholders to addressing issues of rural development within these identified nodes. This is basically a special arrangement of where these nodes are located. You'll note that if you take the Vembe node in Musina, where Mapungubwe is located, you find that Mapungubwe fits very well within the Vembe rural node that has been identified collectively through the Comprehensive Rural Development Program and also through the consultations with the provinces as well. So in other words, the kind of intervention that is earmarked for rural development by other government stakeholders or spheres of government, it adds to the kind of intervention that we have that we want to make in the World Heritage Site within the particular rural node in terms of development. In other words, we are there to join forces as various government departments with responsibilities in these kind of rural nodes, as opposed to working silos, but rather joining forces to maximize the impact of what we are trying to do. Again, this is basically the spread of 8 World Heritage Sites across all the provinces. You'll see, as I indicated, there's Mapungubwe close to Zimbabwe. Up there, the Search Content Cave, which is part of the Cradle of Humankind fossil harmonized site. We have the Ukatamba Drakensberg World Heritage Site, Sestersfeld, the Cape Floral Kingdom, the Western Cape and Robben Island, as well. There's also Isimangaliso Wetland Park in KZN. It used to be the Greater St. Lucia, but now the name has been changed to Isimangaliso. These are all the 8 World Heritage Sites that we've clearly identified where we need to provide some kind of intervention from a tourism development point of view. Robben Island, it is well known, and it's under the custodian of the Department of Agriculture. ASMCAL is the management authority of the site itself. And then the rest of the World Heritage Sites, the Mapungubwe, the Cradle of Humankind, Ukatamba Drakensberg, Isimangaliso, Freya Ford, Cape Floral Kingdom, Festerfeld, under the custodian of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Environmental Affairs. This is more detailed information about the cultural significance of each of the sites, and also the date of proclamation of them being recognized as World Heritage Sites under UNESCO, the location also of the sites in the different provinces. These are just the pictorials and pictures of of the some of the World Heritage Sites. Below there you'll see that's the Interpretive Center in Mapungubwe. The Interpretive Center is a very interesting structure in Mapungubwe. You'll see that it's a green building. They've used the local material and appointed also local labor force to construct that Interpretive Center. It won a global award for being a green building and also using the natural resources very well and efficiently as well. How have we gone about implementing our strategies? We set out to conduct a needs assessment in the 8 World Heritage Sites. That was last year. And from the needs assessment, we were able to lift key priority areas for our intervention in this financial year. One of the key intervention areas that we set out to pursue is to improve tourism interpretive signage within the World Heritage Sites. If you pass through, for instance, your Bavias Kloof, which is part of the Cape Floral Kingdom, in Kazadu District Municipality, you would drive through that interesting scenic, valley, without knowing that you're actually within a World Heritage Site because there's poor signage or interpretive signage within that valley or that heritage resource. So a number of, in fact, all of the 8 World Heritage Sites present this kind of challenge, which needs a lot of work and intervention from various government departments. But we said, let's start with the tourism interpretive signage because it's an area which, jointly with the management authorities of the World Heritage Sites, we can manage as the National Department of Tourism. So we're busy with that process in this financial year. And then issues of improving tourism infrastructure development. This is a long-term initiative where we need to raise capital to assist with the upgrade of tourism facilities in this World Heritage Sites. This is basically the details about the needs assessment and what came out of the needs assessment. As I indicated, there were issues of poor signage, lack of adequate tourism facilities, poor road access to some of the World Heritage Sites. You see, as you proceed to Mapungubwe, the road is not so good there. And local authorities, provincial authorities, even national government has been engaged regarding the road maintenance and upkeep of the road itself. And what we did also in the interim in terms of profiling and promoting our World Heritage Site, we staged a heritage pavilion to showcase and promote the 8 World Heritage Site at the Tourism Indaba in 2013, just as an low-hanging kind of fruit or that we can immediately intervene on. And we also produced a DVD that seeks to profile the products within the 8 World Heritage Sites. We have the DVD, there is a copy, and further copies can be arranged for honorable members. There are impacts that have been realized from this kind of intervention of profiling the 8 World Heritage Sites. For instance, Robben Island Heritage Site recorded 30% increase of visits in 2013-2014 compared to 18 in 2012-2013. In other words, there was an increase of about 22%. Well, they had the big boat, Skulule, that did that. But again, they have been outsourcing, boats within the waterfront precinct to take people across the Robben Island. But the boat problem is a serious challenge that the management of Robben Island, they are seeking various ways of finding solutions to that. And then Asankal is the custodian of Robben Island, which are central in trying to put this in place as well. We spoke also about the tourism interpretive signage. Here, basically, we said as the National Department of Tourism, our contribution towards signage will start with the 5 World Heritage Sites first in this financial year, helping them with their tourism interpretive signage, and then we'll proceed to the next 3 in the next financial year. This is how basically the signage will look like. But it will be information that is made easily accessible, you know, to ordinary and average members of our community, and also to encourage public access into these protected areas. You know, previously well-heritage sites were perceived to be sites which are only for a particular group of people, the elite and so on. But here, there is concerted effort working with national parks and the management authorities to open them up to broad members of the public to access the World Heritage Sites. I mean, Cradle of Mankind, it is a site that archaeologically, they say that we all come from that particular site, you know, as this modern type of Homo sapiens, you know, but it was always closed, you know, to researchers and so on, but now it has been opened up. It has an interpretive center, Marubeng, which can be accessed by school kids as well. There are tours that are arranged around it. So we need to open up our heritage resources as well for increased public access. We received proposals from different World Heritage Sites for infrastructure development. The proposals are being considered through our EPWB program. These are hard infrastructure construction, you know, proposals for facilities within the World Heritage Site. The very important project as well that we are pursuing within the Maloli Drakensberg route, it cuts across three provinces, the route itself, back into Lesotho, KZN, Eastern Cape, Free State, and it goes into the mountain kingdom of Lesotho. The route itself is aligned to the demarcations of the World Heritage Site, the Maloli Drakensberg World Heritage Site. On the South African side, we were always fixated on conservation. On the Lesotho side, they wanted job creation. So UNESCO had to make a ruling to say that no, we need to take into account both these important factors. And therefore, there was a name change to this particular World Heritage Site to rather, and instead of having it as the previous name or what it was referred before as Kahlama Drakensberg, now it is Maloli Drakensberg Park World Heritage Site. Maloli to incorporate the Lesotho component, the Mountain Kingdom, and then the Drakensberg is the South African Lake as well to match. Remember again, this is a site of which needs to promote regional integration. Under UNESCO, regional integration, social cohesion are very key, you know, as the basis of making these sites work better as outstanding universal significant sites. We also have a program on capacity building in rural nodes. We've started in various provinces in Mpumalanga, KZN, Limpopo, and Northwest. And these are ongoing. We've got ongoing workshops on capacity building, and the target really here is to bring information to the local government structures on the latest, the trends in tourism development, how to help them manage effectively the portfolio of tourism development within their ambit. And in conclusion, the following actions and activities are in process of implementation: facilitate implementation of NET strategies and programs across three spheres of government. We cannot do it alone as the National Department of Tourism, but rather have a shared approach that can involve others as well in helping us implement our strategy. Enforce alignment plans and programs across the three spheres of government, cooperation and partnerships across. Prioritize tourism development in rural economies in response to national outcomes, as I indicated. Again, support emerging enterprises and SMMEs in tourism sector. We do have a program. I think this one will need a different presentation, Chair, Honorable Chair, where we can take you through the kind of work we're doing within the space of tourism enterprise development. Skills development and training initiatives are very crucial as continuous interventions by national department, but also the sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, sir, for a very cogent and well-considered presentation. I especially enjoyed the first part before you got harried by by the Chair, because I enjoyed the philosophical underpinning of the work that you're trying to do. I'm going to retract back to my profession, which is in the media practice. You know, there's a woman in Clark Atlanta University who wrote a very comprehensive paper on film-induced tourism. It's a concept that is picking up speed globally now. I'll make very commercial examples so that we all understand. You know, if you take, for instance, a film called Jurassic Park, which had world acclaim and it was commercially extremely viable, but what it also did is promote the site Jurassic Park. And it's a very interesting marketing strategy in that you invest money in it, and it's money that you get back if it's a well-packaged product. It's money that you get back, but you also get the side benefits of marketing that product. The reason why I'm saying this is because I think we're underusing that space, especially for the 8 World Heritage Sites. You know, your 8 heritage sites, this is because they're internationally acclaimed sites. This is a particular area in which we need to invest, especially in the film industry, and that would demand, I think, a correlation between your department, the Department of Arts and Culture, Department of Communications, and so on and so forth, DTI. So I would suggest that we look at that as a, you know, and it's a very concentrated, you need to know exactly what you're marketing, and you already have the advantage of knowing that you already want to do the 8 World Heritage Sites. And it's a sustained effort. You know, people get into it thinking that they're going to see results immediately, but it takes a while. So you need to sustain it. The Niagara Falls, the Grand Canyon, those are all marketed through a time, you know, and take that into consideration. That's one point. The second point is around the Maluti route. I'm a huge enthusiast of the tourism potential in Lesotho in particular. And I'm one of the people who would propagate that we should assist Lesotho to develop their tourist economy, because it is a country that's struggling a lot, especially in that space. But it is a country that has a lot of potential. And in us helping them with their tourism, we're also helping ourselves, because they're right in the middle of us. For the people to get there, they need to get through us. And so it's a byproduct. You know, the marketing of our own country would be a byproduct of marketing theirs, so to speak. Those are the two points that I've. I also traveled. Sorry. Say, can I call order on this? The DA always, every time when I speak, they have to make these. My last point. which relates to the DA. I've also traveled around the world. I've never, in my entire traveling space, I've never heard of people complaining about crime in this country. It's a thing that I hear in this country, I must say. And I'm not saying that there's no crime in this country. You know, in places like Jamaica, in Mombasa, those places, people still go there. People come to this country, they go to Soweto, they go to, you know, so I'm not sure. Just throwing it out there. Thank you. I go there all the time. I go there all the time.
I can understand. If you look at the system, I'm worried because the system activity in the district compared to the other problems. Let's have one little favor.
Actually, I'm not going to go into the whole analysis of what I said. I just want to say, please get the four votes to Rhode Island. You know, just a stupid thing, but like, I mean, I wanted to take my children there how many times, and every time I have to book online, and even online booking like 2-3 weeks before line, you can't get to Rhode Island. So, it's just a simple thing, but I think for cultural heritage, from even South African point of view, I think it's very important to make it accessible for a lot of South Africans as well.
That's a little thing. We take so long to get
Chairperson, tourism, cultural and cultural research. Might you not go and look and they say it's not accessible? Must we not go and look at our international agreements on research or people coming in doing PhDs here and see what international agreements we have in those lines? The balance between conservation and cultural heritage and so on, my concern is development rather than the beautiful picture of cultural heritage, green economy, and so on and so forth. For instance, the classy Fontein Grot that is at the coast at Oyster Bay, that area, that could be destroyed by a nuclear plant. The biggest middens are there. It should be a cultural heritage site, but there's a blank on that issue. Then, when it comes to our cultural heritage site, and as the gentleman said, it goes about education. Is it part of our school curriculum in geography or history or whatever? I think it should if it's not. The Babians Mega Reserve is now not in the Kathrade district anymore. It's been renamed. It's now the Sarah Bartman district municipality. And I'm very worried about the poor signage because we have to work on that. I know that they work with the EPWD program on the roads, and it's very exciting. But to release the money is a difficult issue. It takes months for the people to actually get into the site and go and work on the road. So, yeah. Thank you very much for a very interesting presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now I can see that the EF is quite in a good mood today. They're really in a good mood. Maybe it's one of the other issues. Chairperson, I must appreciate the two presentations that were made today. Very exciting, thoughtful, full for thought. And in fact, they open up our minds as South Africans, how South Africa is shaped up around the issues, tourism, heritage, and cultural tourism. I'm very much fascinated. And also because my daughter is doing great of one of her subjects, tourism. I would be much more smarter. It's just that they are writing very soon their final exams. But we have always been engaging with one another. The issue of educating the nation about this matter is very critical. If you can have us, your booklets, you know, for our constituency offices, it will assist us, give us more information on the subject, on the matter, the sites and so on. It's very critical, the communication. The second matter, Chairperson, as you are improving these internationally acclaimed sites, I hope that also our workers are coming along on the various same sites, because the emphasis is given on one side, but there are workers who must maintain these sites, and I think their situation should also be looked at. The ordinary workers, that is a bigger term that we normally call. So I'm saying we need to look into that, so that they are left behind. As we are making profit and so on, the workers should also be carried along. We must get that flavor in that sense around the matter. Otherwise, on check out the issue, I'm also happy because as you are talking, we are coming from conspiracies. Fortunately, the honorable member for even has covered me, because I'm coming from the Eastern Cape, from the Western side, Metro and Sarah Bartman region. And I was always listening attentively in terms of that side. Now we are giving attention to it. We have to go back and give report. I know you are well looked after. There will be something coming your way, because in terms of improving the site and the signage, sometimes also the road, so that it's improved here and there. So saying these documents that you are giving us, perhaps we do go back and give reports about your performance. And they also advise us what to do. That's why I'm raising the matter of the workers. They should be looked after, as they are looking very well after those areas that you have mentioned here. Otherwise, I think, give us more information to finish up the job. We are much more schooled. We would want to be also gurus of this matter. Thank you very much for the two presentations. They know their story. You know, I couldn't even write. I like writing. But I was just listening, fascinated to both of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. No more compliments, guys. I think you guys have had enough already. Okay, wildlife, let's be number one in the world, okay? I think we've got the greatest wildlife collection in the world. Number two, I'm not sure about islands, our attraction, but maybe I missed a point. You mentioned something about yes, it's beside Robben Island, I was thinking of the other. Robben Island has a unique invitation. But you mentioned about Japanese and the jacaranda trees. Now, the Japanese love flowers. And we do have another, you know, and I'm sure our special representative from Northern Cape was able to have, was it Northern Cape or Eastern Cape, where these flowers bloom overnight.
Northern
Cape, right?
Namakwala.
You see, very far away from there.
That you mind those
targets the Japanese for that. If they enjoy the jacaranda trees, you know, they'll go crazy about that. I've never seen it myself, but I believe it's something to
that. Well, that's first
well. Okay. Yeah, but you... Hey, just they are rude.
No.
Okay. Okay, then about the local tourists and the domestic tourists and so on, I'm sure you guys in your strategic plans have had a lot of discussions about the definitions here. I think somebody already mentioned this issues of the definitions. But I just would like that somewhere you guys keep in the back of your minds what in South Africa, and I don't really like this term, what we call migrant labor. You know, the people in South Africa are traveling every weekend, every month, from place of abode or their residences to these, and keep them in mind as well when we are looking at providing facilities for tourists, for visitors, business tourists, whatever we would like to call it. The issue of the protection of the plethora, as you put it, versus the needs of humankind, that's an ongoing issue all the time, and really we cannot be allocating more land and more, you know, towards the protection of these and forget that we need to take care of our own people. That's very, very important. Okay, already it has been mentioned about school curriculum. I think that this is very important, especially when it comes to this. You know, let's be honest with ourselves. The foreign visitor that is coming to South Africa comes here essentially for Kruger National Park, Table Mountain, Cape Town, and Robben Island, of course, and of course Sun City. Believe it or not, people from overseas love Sun City. But the heritage sites, we need to promote them amongst our own people. And I think a good place to start would be at the schools. At school level. So you know, if we can talk about it, then I think we can, sorry, Chair, won't be another minute. Okay, the issue of Jurassic Park, and very, very well explained by a very, you know, the EFF in the corner. But let's not let's not talk about let's not forget that we can also use the social media, YouTube and that kind of thing to promote in a very similar way, the way Jurassic Park has been used to. Okay. All right. Finally, the issue, I'm just going to mention it in 10 seconds, the issue of crime. South Africa has the highest gap or the biggest gap between rich and poor in the country, and we have the highest rate of crime in the world. These two are directly related. If we want to address the issue of crime, we need to address the gap that exists between rich and poor in this country. Thank you, Chef.
You see, because I wanted to say that, thank you very much for sticking to your 2 minutes.
Just two points
from my side, Jay. The enterprise development in the tourism sector, how do you think, because I, from what I'm sitting, my conclusion is that it is transversal between yourself and the Department of Small Business Development. How do you envisage to deal with that? And the second part, the Department of Arts and Culture, I know for the fact from my previous experience that they are busy with project they call the National Liberation Route. I know it's going to get my friends on my left teaching this one. In the context of social cohesion and regional integration, I know there is a house in Swaziland where I was also kept for some time called Bamkoko. What is your take with regard to that in terms of from the tourism aspect? You find that in Lesotho, you find that in Mozambique. I don't know. Yeah. No, it was a commune for the ANC.
Can I just add two additional questions to that? The one is a follow-on on the question raised by Honourable Scar on communication. In the plenary of the NCOP, when we did the budget vote, Minister Hanekom made reference to what I use in my own terms, the referral centres, which is a point where people are there. I think that's one of the things that we are falling short of, because people, even local tourists, don't know about opportunities in our surrounding areas. Can you tell us a little bit more about whether we are making progress with regard to that? Because we've had that as a big problem now, as well with China, where there was this misinformation distributed about Ebola in South Africa, and we depend on other people. If it's something that SA Tourism is taking care of, give us some insight into that. That's the one point I wanted to raise. The other point I wanted to raise was about the benefits of the local communities. Maybe I should talk about the involvement of the local communities. Where we're sitting, we get the impression that if you look, for example, at the Kruger National Park, the people living in the areas surrounding the park are seeing the opportunities, but they are not benefiting from the opportunities that tourism brings into that region. Are we being misled, or is it something that's true? Let me give a second example of that. Just to say that if we talk about communities around Sun City and the Glansberg area there as well, one gets a sense that there is a different problem, where people aren't adequately trained so that they can actually... I mean, I was shocked when I was there. There was nobody selling curios. And I was saying, but don't these people have some artifacts or something that they could sell? Maybe it has changed now, because I'm talking about a few years ago. But the point I'm trying to make, maybe with a bad example, is to say that to what extent is tourism development, and it links with the question of small business, enabling the locals to be able to also sell their wares at these tourism sites? I know at the Hector Peterson Memorial in Soweto, you are overwhelmed with what it is that they're selling there. But I get the sense that if you look at some of the other tourism sites, that is not the same. Can we agree that we'll give you like 8 minutes to respond?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think the questions and comments are well received. I think there's a few, there was a host of comments that came really from Honourable Members and also proposals that seek to strengthen the work that we've just started, especially in the space of the A1 Heritage Site. I think key is to tap into innovations in terms of profiling the World Heritage Site, as it was indicated by Honourable Member Mugwena, around filming, using film as an instrument to profile the diverse cultural heritage resources within the World Heritage Site. That is one. I think we need to be mindful of the fact that we can use various platforms to really profile the products within our World Heritage Site, tapping into the feeling. There was also another point around social media as well, using it effectively, you know, using the gadget effectively, because that is the latest means of effectively communicating information with various audiences. Again, there was an issue around, I think, Robben Island issues. We're all aware and we do have keen interest around Robben Island, and collectively, I'm sure, we would love to see the island operating optimally as a globally competitive destination. There are plans by the National Private Department of Arts and Culture and various role players to address these deficiencies around Robben Island. There was another question here that indeed we need to be mindful of the fact that we cannot, development should not be at the rail of conservation of the very resource that we want to sell to the world, but most importantly, heritage resources. We know that they are irreplaceable. If we deplete them and destroy them now, we rob that opportunity, you know, of their appreciation. But, you know, the future generation won't be able to access them. You know, so we need to look after our heritage resources in a sustainable manner, even though there must be room for development, because again, acute need. No. I'm saying tourism development, because tourism can serve as an instrument to provide the conservation needs and aspects of the heritage resource, not from a construction point of view, but the tourism development point of view. Because remember, tourism is an instrument for conservation. If you look at how tourism within our World Heritage Site has started to be positioned, it is informed by a culture-conscious approach, you know, of the green economy, to look after the very same resource that tourists are coming to appreciate. It must be looked after now and for posterity as well. So that is very important to be mindful of. The strategy, if you go into the details of the strategy, it starts off to say that tourism should serve as a vehicle for conservation. Remember, mass tourism will take away from the heritage resources. It will destroy the very same product that tourists are there to appreciate, but we are turning things around. The mindset is very important to change the mindset around it. Issues of research and education are very central in the context of heritage and cultural tourism products. To say that we should always develop a repository, educate more people to broaden and share this kind of information with a broad public, including, you know, pupils in schools, including ordinary and average South Africans, you know, in our rural communities, in our townships, everywhere, basically, so that they've got information readily available for them to access in order for them to appreciate the World Heritage Site and also realize the benefits of the site for themselves as well and their children as well. There was a question on the need to produce a booklet and a publication around World Heritage that has been noted. I think it's something that we need to explore as a department, but also as a sector as well. How do we use the medium of, you know, booklets and have that distributed alongside social media and a host of other things to publicize the World Heritage Site? enterprise development, there is a program that I indicated. I alluded to the program that we're taking as the National Department of Tourism. It's called the Tourism Enterprise Partnership Program, which looks at providing support to emerging SMEs within the tourism space. That says that will need its own separate presentation because it's quite a big project, and it does provide categories of the kind of intervention that is provided by the TEP program. One of the key areas that the TEP provides support to is market access. You know, how do we increase market of these small businesses or emerging businesses? Most importantly, we need to train, coach small businesses on a continual basis. We need to provide also minimal funds. It doesn't have much resources program itself, but it does provide funding where the small businesses can participate globally on trade shows, you know, to showcase their products alongside a big, you know, conglomerate as well within that space. But there's a whole lot of work that is happening within the SME development space within the tourism sector with our intervention through the TEP program. There was a question around the Liberation Heritage Route. We've started engagements. We do have an MOU with the Department of Arts and Culture on a variety of areas. It's one of the areas that has been flagged as a priority from the Department of Arts and Culture side is the Liberation Heritage Route. We started engagements with them to identify heritage resources or Liberation Heritage sites that are geared towards tourism consumption. Remember, heritage resources, not all heritage resources are open for public consumption. You have graves on separate sites that should not be accessed by people. They serve a conservation purpose. So there are those that are open for public consumption and tourist appreciation. Those are the ones that we're working with the NEC towards, seeing basically what could be done with those ones within the MOU that we have with the NEC. I'll leave it at, I know there's inputs and so on, and my DDGs are here as well to cover areas that I might have left behind. But I'm very pleased to have been given this opportunity to talk and share the work with you. We really appreciate your input as well.
If she wasn't preparing to speak, I would have asked Ms. Rampele to say something. So please. Can we, Honorable Palmer, can I ask you, because she has not spoken, that we give?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond on the issue of community, I'll say, participation or localization. It is a challenge, and it's something that we have started to really see to it that we are on. DDG Tara has spoke about training and capacity building formally by the University of Pretoria. From our side, we are doing an informal capacity building which focuses on the traditional leaders within these rural areas, because we are focusing on the four rural poverty nodes. So we are bringing on board the traditional leaders, the local communities in there, officials from the municipality, so that even the tourism businesses, as a way of trying to start to establish relationship among themselves and to better understand what tourism opportunities do prevail within their focus areas. As we receive requests from provinces for SRI program, which is biased towards poverty alleviation within the rural nodes, what we find is that the contracts that are found between the managing companies, in most instances, they have left out the participation of communities. And this, in a way, causes a problem in the sense that they don't benefit. So from now henceforth, what we are saying, as soon as we have a managing company assisting that community, we need to make sure that the contract must be able to assist. There's a specific project in Northern Cape, the Cloud Lodge. It was funded by SRI. It's functioning well, but the structure is so dilapidated. You ask yourself, if they get this money, what is happening in terms of the maintenance of the structure. Going into the contract is no, is the facility of the community. They are the ones who should be maintaining. But when you talk with the community, they have no clue what is happening. So this is an area which we really need to focus on as we move forward. We are hoping with this capacity building, which is more informal, but making sure that the relationships that are built within these structures will help us to move broadly. Although for the coming, this current financial year, it's only for a respectful focus on the district which are within the poverty nodes. On the liberation route as well, I wanted to indicate that just yesterday we received a letter from the Department of Arts and Culture to say we need to be part of the interministerial committee to look into this matter. I think that will also help to look into other areas like Botswana, like Swaziland, and Mozambique, as the Honourable Member was indicating. I won't go into the enterprise development. Mr. Mani has indicated that. Okay, in terms of what Honourable Mugan has indicated, I think the DVD that we have regarding the aid towards heritage sites, it's not that much, but I think your input in terms of broadening this up is a question of discussing with the Department of Arts and Culture. We already have an MOU with them. I think it will really help us to deal with that. We have a DVD here which we'll give to the chair, but more copies will be made for other members as well. Regarding the curriculum in the education sphere, in terms of the young people being educated on what is happening, especially around the aid world heritage site, something which we haven't yet looked into, but we are involved in a curriculum assessment regarding tourism and hospitality subjects that are being taught within the high schools. We have moved quite a bit on that already. There's a report which has been issues in terms of how we are going to move regarding the alignment of the curriculum so that our young people, when they are done in terms of the subject, they are able to respond to the needs of the industry. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to the colleagues who have their appointments for staying up. I do want to thank Sharma and Petra as well. For people who don't know them, they are here all the time. So you need to engage with them, and you prefer not to go through our secretary to pay for them. I'm sure some of the material that they have been talking about and things like that, they wouldn't mind you communicating with them, kind of politically addressing them, but not from our offices, but they are from the government. So thank you very much. We'll see you on Monday.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Chairperson, I don't want to request reconvening, but there were certain things I was worried about because they are on record, and we did not respond. Silence means something else.
There's no recording happening yet.
There's no recording.
The microphone is just on.
Okay. But it's very briefing, Chairman. Very, very brief. One is Ebola.
Okay, please.
There is an interministerial committee that is dealing with that matter. The convener of this is the Minister of Health. All communication pertinent to Ebola is through the Minister of Health. All other statements and whatever communication we may make is within that particular context. So even the time when SAT issued a statement, that statement was based on the statement issued by the Institute of Communicable Diseases. We don't have any direct role in such. But things we would be able to talk about is how the distances that we're talking about. If you talk about where Ebola is actually taking place now, much more closer to Europe than it is to South Africa. So those are, but on the actual issues pertinent to disease, we don't get involved. On the issue of Sun City, yes, it's private sector.
but it actually is one of the best reforms when it comes to particularly employment-related issues. Their contractual arrangements are such that the kind of pay they tend to pay in Sun City is about 9,000 compared to many other players in our establishment. And I thought maybe just because tomorrow voluntary monitoring group will put it out and so on. And it's a good case. They have a lot of interlinkages with operators. One of the best operators, black operators, that came out of Sun City's own program was Bernard Maroon. And this is the problem that has actually seen him with his concessions that he had, being able to take people directly from Sun City into the Pilantec and the surrounding areas and so on and so forth. But other things, Honorable Jefferson, I think we can discuss at a different time. Thank you.
They are separate.
Thank you.
I actually put up my hand, but you don't have to respond. One of the things that's really nice is where you come from to learn the area where you stay. How many people actually know what's around there? Because when I can tell you now, after I've spoken to you, you will want to come to George and buy a house there and explore the surrounding areas. And I think that's more value when it comes to education in schools. You can do the overall, but to sell your own play. And as soon as kids go into the world, people travel into the world, that's how you sell and bring people in. And then on the island, we can actually, I'm sure you have looked at this, but see what island destinations are close by. We've got a few. And then partnership with those countries and say, listen, you don't have what we have, okay? And we don't have the islands. But together we can sell a package that will bring more people, and I think that's what they make with the island, Honorable Viola.
Please,
just one more point. You know, there was a very hugely successful media drive that came from tourism around that short-lived thing, where it was flighted on television using prominent human beings, and then it went viral on social media, you know, and I thought that was an amazing way to get local tourism going. Short-lived, yes. I think maybe we should go more in that direction, because I do agree that we need to get our people to visit more of our country. Thanks.
No. I'm convinced of this because I can go on forever and ever on this matter. I mean, this is a point that was made by Honorable Law. In Hatfield, the city law, those of us have beauty. Look at the brochures, they show that there is a place just outside of Hamstrup where a satellite dropped, and there was big black mass in the sun. I asked people living in Hamstrup, they don't know about that. And it's such a significant thing, one of the few sites in South Africa where you had a satellite making a hole, and so on. I don't know signs of things like that. I talked to Melissa and Lady Arno, and you were one of those who did not thank you very much for the program.
Thank you very much.
I was giving you all the information.
I'm going to go to the next one.